This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyi Suhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Cameroon says its military has seized a large consignment of war weapons from armed groups based in the Central African Republic that have been stealing and carrying out attacks in northern Cameroon.
That's Moki Edwin Kinzeka reporting from Ingwanderi. Details coming up. Also, militants attacked a town southwest of the Somali capital Mogadishu, killing at least six people. And the current president of the Gambia, Yahya Jammeh. Still, protests about voting irregularities in the election and refuses to step down. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Cameroon says its military has seized a large consignment of war weapons from armed groups based in the Central African Republic that have been stealing and carrying out attacks in northern Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has the story from Ingwanderi.
Kildadi Tagioke Buka, governor of the Adamawa region of Cameroon, displayed some of the weapons seized during the military operation, including guns, grenades, and piles of ammunition, were laid out on tabs.
I am totally satisfied. You have seen this quantity of arms our guys have taken. It's a good thing that the forces are out to secure our population. I want to seize the opportunity to encourage forces of law and order to do everything possible to put an end to criminality, which is rampant in our region.
During the military operation, the governor said several of the attackers were either killed or arrested, while others fled back across the border to the Central African Republic. Buka says armed men from the Central African Republic have been organizing regular attacks on Cameroonian territory for the past 3 months. He says they have kidnapped cattle ranchers and business persons for ransom, attacked farmers for food supplies, and used Cameroon's territory as a hideout when they ran into trouble with United Nations peacekeepers in their own country. The governor says several hostages were freed during this operation, and soldiers also seized drugs used by the fighters. It is unclear whether the fighters belong to a specific rebel group in the CAR. The governor would not say. The Central African Republic has been awash in militias since a rebel coup in March 2013 plunged the country into chaos. The UN peacekeeping mission, along with the new government elected a year ago, has been able to restore some stability, but insecurity persists in the countryside. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Ingwanderi.
The Gambian may greet a new president on January 19th, but the current president, Yahya Jammeh, continues to protest that there were voting irregularities in the December 1st election, and he refuses to step down. That's the kind of political fireworks that can burn a national economy. VOA's David Arnold talked to Vira Songwe, a fellow at the Brookings Institution and a World Bank representative for the Gambia. She talked about Gambian economic issues that are in the political balance.
Clearly, I think one of the policy stances that the government has taken, which have affected the economy in the last 2 years, is the exchange rate policy. I think that there's almost a 40% exchange rate misalignment in the Gambia. That has clearly not worked. So I think that will be a big one, that 16% tax revenue to GDP. We're hoping that the countries can get to somewhere between 20-25 tax revenue to GDP. Foreign account deficits have been quite big, but that's also because of the export policies and what they're exporting and the expenditure patterns. But I think the big one is the exchange rate. But the arrest, you know, poor performance of state-owned enterprises has been a growing concern for a while now. Let's remember that even though Gambia did not have Ebola, Gambia was one of the countries that suffered, particularly from Ebola, because it's a country that depends heavily on tourism and remittances.
Is there anything about the recent political disruption that might further affect the economy?
Well, one likes to make investments in a stable and predictable macroeconomic framework. You know, once you have uncertainty about policy direction, of course, the president-elect, President Barrow, comes from the private sector, understands the private sector well. And so there was a sense, if you get somebody who understands policies that relate to how you can make the private sector grow, reform state-owned enterprises, you know, maybe put in place some public-private projects, one will see things going better. I think the fact that there is not yet much clarity on the results of the election means, like in any other part of the world, that the private sector will not take a stance right now, will not bet on the country until there was more clarity. So yes, the uncertainty, I mean, I think the private sector likes certainty more than anything else. If you have a situation where people are waiting, the economy does not grow. If one was hoping for a rebound or a continued rebound of the Gambian economy, that will clearly not happen. And when you're just coming out of an election period where spending tends to be quite high, you're already moving towards some contraction. That will be, I think, the largest and the biggest impact or the uncertainty on the economy.
If Mr. Barrow does take office, what would you anticipate he would do to help the economy?
I must say that I haven't heard any clear policies. I think clearly a few things that could be done is clarity on the macroeconomic policy, clarity on the exchange rate policy, what is, you know, moving towards a single exchange rate, moving towards maybe stronger independence of the central bank so that you do actually have market-reflective exchange rates. I think Gambia has benefited from that in the past because it's made Gambia more competitive, and that has actually helped Gambia grow at 7-8%. I think another big thing of Gambia is a transshipment economy. So there's a lot of business that happens there, and if one were to open the economy, one of the things that the African Union and the rest of the continent talks a lot about is regional integration. Gambia is uniquely place to be able to provide a logistics hub into the rest of the continent. There is a lot of trade with Senegal, I think, building the Senegal-Gambia bridge, making sure that that traffic there is open and flowing freely.
Is there anything to recommend possibility that the current president stays in office? Could he provide some of this economic security?
I mean, that's a very political question. I'll leave it to the Gambians and the Gambian Constitutional Committee to decide. I think the first thing for an economy is certainty on the political and the macro front for it to grow. Gambia has a lot of potential, particularly in tourism and telecommunications and logistics and the energy sector as well. I think it's a country in the way you can do a number of renewable energy projects. So there is a lot of interest in the Gambia by the private sector. And we hope that the private sector and the rest of the international community can quickly go back to help the people of Gambia continue to grow.
That was the World Bank's Vira Songwe talking with VOA's David Arnold about economic issues in Gambia's political balance. You were listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Huhib in Washington. Thirteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Militants attacked a town southwest of the Somali capital Mogadishu, killing at least six people. Cameroon says its military has seized a large consignment of war weapons from armed groups based in the Central African Republic. And the current president of the Gambia, Yahya Jammeh, still protests about voting irregularities in the election and refuses to step down. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. In Ghana, President John Mahama's governing party, the National Democratic Party, NDC, lost to the largest opposition party, the New Patriotic Party, in the country's 2016 general elections in early December. Several reasons were attributed to the party's defeat, including complacency of government appointees. Confidence Abosi is a district chair of the party, the NDC. In a conversation with reporter Kofi Abochi, he says party executives distanced themselves from the party prior to the elections, but he predicts the party will bounce back in 2020.
honestly speaking, it is difficult for me to hold a handle on one thing that contributes to that defeat. Painful as it is, we can think about one or two things that might have led to the heaviest defeat suffered by the NDC under the Fourth Republic. One, primarily, is the perceived economic hardship from people. That is government economic policies that is not favoring people. You are investing in infrastructure. You are not putting money in the pocket. People are complaining. Obviously, you see that, yes, people are seeing physical infrastructure, but they are not feeling it in their pocket. That is what they say. So obviously, that might have also contributed to the hideous defeat that NDC suffered. But don't forget also, there is this perceived arrogance on the part of some of the appointees also. You cannot also lose sight of the fact that, yes, indeed, we ourselves, we have problem with some of the appointees. Getting in touch with some of the appointees just for basic information as somebody on the ground, you need concrete, hardcore information to just defeat the argument of opposition in our backyard. You call ministers. Those in charge of hardcore data is difficult to get. You send text message, you send WhatsApp, you give call. They will not even respond, even acknowledge your text message, let alone even respond.
Have you raised any of these issues with the top hierarchy of the party?
Why not? This is something that we have been complaining about from the constituency to regional and the national level.
Now, you have enumerated several failures on your part. So what do you expect of the incoming government, the New Patriotic Party led by Nana Akufo-Addo, first 100 days?
No, obviously, the New Patriotic Party made promises to Ghanaians. But on their promises, they were voted to power. I can tell you that if they are able to implement all this policy, Ghana will be a better place for all of us. I am looking forward to seeing MPP restoring teacher allowance within the first 3 months as they promised. I am also expectant to see NDC, the New Patriotic Party, restoring the nursing allowance within the first 3 months. I am also expectant to see the New Patriotic Party giving senior secondary school free education from basic to secondary, boarding or day. That is what I am expecting them to do. And then I am also expecting them to also continue some of the projects that the John Dramani Mahama administration started here. There are so many promises that they made. $1 million per one constituency. We have 275 constituencies in Ghana. $1 million conservatively. Let's say that is 4 million Ghana cedis. 4 million Ghana cedis for this district annually will do a lot.
Now, looking at government's pocket, do you think this is possible?
No. You see, it might be possible if they want to maintain the inflow that is already existing. That is cash flow, that's the sources of revenue. Look, we are talking about a regime that is coming. That is to reduce taxes. All the areas that we get our revenue from, they are saying that no way, we are coming to reduce VAT from hot 17.5 to hot 3.5. We are coming to abolish this tax. We are coming to reduce water bill. Everything is being reduced. They are reducing almost everything, and yet the expenditure line is increasing. $1 million, one factory per district. But mind you, I've heard the story. They say, oh, as for the factory, it is hot, private sector led. They are coming to create enabling environment, you know, this fanciful way, enabling environment for the private sector to lead the charge for the factory per district. That is what they want to use to create job. And the job that they are going to create, they say all graduates will get job. So I am expectant, seriously, that I want to see my fellow graduates get job. I want to see my district have hot factory employing people. I want to see my district or my constituency receiving $1 million every month. That is what we are looking for under this recently.
That was the district chair of Ghana's National Democratic Party, Confidence Abosi. He was speaking in Accra with reporter Kofi Abochi. South Africa's Mervyn Davis has won an international reputation as a maker of fine-stringed musical instruments, including guitars, banjos, and violins. His works are very different from classical, conventional designs, but Davis says they are still based on the beauty of the early master builders. He says his desire remains to build instruments that meet the demands of modern composers, express modern aesthetics, and make use of modern technology while retaining the romance and lure of the classical instruments. Darren Taylor reports in the final installment of a series on a few of South Africa's master crafters.
Mervyn Davis strums his smooth talker guitar. Musicians around the world say its sound is different to any other. One, the luthier, or guitar maker, is working on at the moment, has a tan body contrasting with a dark, almost purple color. Davis makes his smooth talkers from hard African kiat wood.
It's available abundantly. It's also very, very stable, and it's got a brilliant tone to it. Kiat is a bit lighter in weight, so it's got a bit mellower tone. But having said that, it's the luthier's job to translate that into the instrument that he's building. I was always curious about coming up with something that I could call my own, and so I always experimented. When you work experimentally, you somehow have to make it pleasing to the eye still.
Davis is in his 60s, tanned and lithe, with long silver hair. He's been making stringed instruments since he was a child.
So it's been a passion all my life. I can't even remember when it started, but my parents told me that as a kid they couldn't get me away from guitar shops. I made petrol can guitars like African kids do, and it developed from there. It just got a bit more real every time.
Davis planes wood for a guitar in his workshop in the bush near the town of Bruderstroom in South Africa's northwest province. He says he made his first proper stringed instrument, a mandolin, when he was 14. He was inspired by his father, who made one while imprisoned in a POW camp in Italy during the Second World War.
And then he escaped one day, took the mandolin with him, and finally the mandolin got left in the attic of a farm building, where he was hiding for the Germans and had to run for his life. And the mandolin got left behind. And I think for any little boy, that is a story that would capture his imagination.
When he was a student, he made his first two classical guitars, one for a friend.
The one I made for myself, I ended up selling in a pawn shop to get petrol money to get back home for December holidays.
Davis studied architecture, but demand for his instruments rose so much that he gave it up to pursue his musical passion. He says he's always been very experimental.
The ergonomics of the instrument is one that I always felt that I could possibly find different solutions for. Things like access to the neck higher up than a traditional guitar yields. So it's about playability. And the minute you start fiddling with that, the proportions of the instrument changes. Some of my guitars are very trebly, and that very much is a matter of taste. Some people don't like that at all. Other people, and I'd say more people that play lead, like the treble power of guitars.
Davis's desire to innovate is evident in almost every instrument he makes, like his double-necked 12-string acoustic guitars. Some of South Africa's top musicians use Davis's creations. Guitarist Blackie Swart plays the classic composition Apache by The Shadows.
Blackie being known as a popular artist, but he's one of the greatest guitar players in the country and deserves a lot more credit than he's been given.
But artists around the world use his instruments, including one acknowledged as one of the best ever banjo players, America's Bella Fleck. Davis says the most fascinating part of building guitars and banjos is the actual voicing of the instruments. He follows a process unlike most other luthiers, something that gives the instruments special resonation.
I'm able to do that by gluing the back of the instrument on last. So I actually build the instrument to the point where I can string it up and tape the back on. And then by removing wood from the braces or adding on in some cases, I can get to the sound that I'm after.
Davis drills in his workshop. He uses American wood like spruce and cedar in some of his designs, including one used by renowned American singer-songwriter Charlie Daniels.
Yeah, that's great. That is the luck I have. That had taken me years and years of writing letters and to retailers and people not being interested and this, that and the other.
But supreme skill rather than luck is responsible for Davis's craft, and in his admittedly small way, success has arrived. Some of his guitars are distributed by the Grün Guitar Company in one of the globe's great music capitals, Nashville, exposing Davis's instruments to more of the world's great musicians. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg. You don't like the way I'm living. You just leave this long hair country for long.
Libya has sent dozens of Malians back to their homeland yesterday with help from the International Organization for Migration. A reporter with the French news agency AFP says many of the migrants were happy to return home. They said that's because of their poor treatment in Libya, where some had been detained in prison. The IOM chartered a plane to fly at least 157 migrants back to Bamako, where they arrived last night. Libya is a frequent route to Europe for migrants from Mali, Niger, and other parts of West Africa. Thousands travel to the area every year, hoping to be smuggled across the Mediterranean. Earlier this month, Libya's neighbor Algeria sent back 260 Malians who became stranded at the African shore. The United Nations says Libya is the most dangerous route into Europe, where it estimates 1 in 47 migrants die trying to cross the sea. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports, coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Jonas Cummings, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
With your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. This one I judge you. This one I judge you. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa. Africa.